Mr. Whittaker, a real one. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Whittaker?
Yes, sir. I was born at Sutton in Ashfield in Nottinghamshire, October 15th, 1918.
And what did your father do for a living?
School teacher.
And how many were there in the family?
There were five of us. I had one brother and the rest girls.
And did you have a comfortable upbringing in Sutton in Ashfield?
Actually, we'd left Sutton in Ashfield quite early on. I can't remember living there, so we'd moved to Nottingham when I first.
Which part of Nottingham?
Bobber's Mill. That was where I started. I started school when I was five, and I can remember Bobber's Mill School quite well.
Which school was that?
That was that Burridge Road Infants.
And what was your next school?
And then we moved, for a time we moved back to the village where my grandfather had a farm, and my father, he, as they say now, commuted to Nottingham where he taught. We lived there for a year or two, and then we moved to Chilwell, which is near Beeston, and I went to the school there, Chilwell School. And I know I left there when I was 11, because that is when I went on to Mundella in Nottingham.
To what, sorry?
Mundella.
What's that?
That was a secondary school.
And what type of a school was it? Was it a good school, Mundella?
Yes, it was not. It was in the Nottingham High School was the top one, and Mundella was in the sort of second row. You know, it was the equivalent of the grammar school. It wasn't called a grammar school. It was simply Mundella. Mundella School.
Did you specialise in anything in particular? I mean, did you have any special interests or football or anything? Cricket.
Eventually, I became hockey was my big thing at school. The thing that I always remember, I was hopeless at maths. The rest, I was pretty good. English, that drawing was my pet art, as they called it. That was my pet subject, and following that, English, history, that sort of subject.
What did you plan to do as you came to the end of it, your education? Did you want to stay on if you could, or did your father have, because your father was a teacher, did he have that in mind for you?
I think he wanted me to. He thought I should go on to teaching, but unfortunately, just at the end of my school career, if it can be called a career, my mother was taken ill. She had thrombosis, had to stay in bed. The others were forgotten why, but I stayed at home for several months.
And how old were you then?
I must have been 15, probably 15. And as a result, the headmaster, they wouldn't let me take the matriculation exam. The head said I should stay on another year, which would have pushed me on to 17. And so I left and got a job. I went back for another, I finished the sort of terms I had that they insisted on, but since they wouldn't let me take the exam, I think I left in the Easter when the exams were due in the. They used to take them in the summer term.
So that would be Easter 34, would it?
Yes, it would be about, must have been about 34.
And what job did you go for?
I eventually got a job at what was then Ericsson's at Beeston. Then we'd moved and we were living at a place called near Lenton Abbey in Nottingham, which was where a bicycle ride away.
And what was Ericsson's?
Ericsson made telephones and telephone equipment, telephone exchanges, everything connected with.
And what were you actually doing at the firm?
My first job, I was what they call a shop clerk. We kept all the records for time the girls spent on a job, which was a semi-bonus scheme. And you actually did your work in what they call a shop. Mine was a press shop. Terrific noise, you know. And then, I forget, I'd been there some time and I got well known with the rate fixers, the people who came to work, you know, the rate fixers, times to the experts. And they were looking for someone to do a lot of their calculations to save them time. And I was lucky enough, they wanted someone and I happened to fit the bill. So I got this job with them. Half a crown a week extra I got. I can always remember my half a crown extra. And I wore a white coat. It was quite a good job, actually, because I picked things up fairly quickly. And I used to go, and for instance, someone would say they wanted a job retiring, it had been altered. And they'd say, go along and have a look and see what you think, before they went along. Their time was obviously worth more than mine. And things like that. But mainly, they'd hand me a set of figures and I'd work out the average time taken to do the thing, from which they worked out what bonus they'd pay on a job.
So you were doing that until the war broke out?
I was doing that until the war broke out.
Now, outside of work, did you maintain your hockey playing?
Yes.
Who did you play for?
I didn't join the club on a regular basis. I played sometimes for Mundella Old Boys. And I've tried for Ericsson's.
And what about, were you a member of any of the boys' organisation, the Boys Brigade, Boy Scouts, any of those churches?
No.
Did it not appeal to you?
No. I wasn't much of a joiner. I had a very good friend from school and we did a lot of cycling. He was trained to be an architect at the City Architects in Nottingham. And we used to go and examine old churches and all sorts of things, you know, anything that he was interested in, I became interested in these. And the cycling got us out.
Now, were you aware of the approach of war?
Yes.
Where did you get your information from? I mean,
all the radio and my father, of course, he got very anxious. He'd been in the First World War.
Had he told you much about the First World War?
Yes. They said I'd take after him. I never stopped talking. Yes, he was. As a teacher, and he liked to talk, and he did tell me about his experiences. And we used to. It was always quite a forward-looking chap, you know. He wasn't fully done in living in the past. And at the time, I've always been mad on aeroplanes, and he used to tell me about the Handley pages and things. Yes, he told me, and of course, he saw the way things were going. And I realise now that he was very anxious about what I was going to do.
Who had he served with?
He served with several regiments. The chief one of which I can remember was the Machine Gun Corps.
I mean, had he given you an idea of how bad it was on the Western Front, or if he was on the Western Front, but I presume he was?
Yes, and he always said he hadn't suffered like a lot of them had. He lost two brothers there, and of course he had seen these things, and he was always telling me just how bad and what I could always remember him telling me that the whole thing was ridiculous.
Did he have an anti-war attitude, would you say? Or was it just that he didn't like what war was?
He didn't like what he'd seen there. But he was not what you'd call anti the war that was coming, if you follow me. He thought the war was coming and he thought we should have to fight.
And he was worried about you and the other lad?
He was it was worried about me and the others, which I didn't realise till a long time later.
Now, what did you see of the war coming? I mean, what did you think of events in Germany, Hitler, that sort of thing? I mean, I know you were very young then, but what did you feel as the 30s went on?
Well, I became, I can remember we were all very alarmed, but I must admit, quite excited over some things. There were one or two of us that were friends there. We said, as I say, mad on aeroplane, oh, we could join the Air Force, which I never did, of course. But things like that, you know, and we used to rabbit on about all the, you know, what we'd joined and how we'd be able to get away from home, you know, and all the sort of ridiculous things you do when you...
Your father hadn't put you off then, really, from the sound of it?
No. I worked with a bunch of people just slightly older than myself and did know, as I say, I had a school friend, and we didn't realise just what we could be letting ourselves in for. It all looked, you know, something a bit exciting, and if it comes, it comes.
Did you see the enemy as Germany, or did you see the enemy as Hitler? Do you see what I mean? Did you separate the two, or did you just...
Not at the time. Hitler, of course, was the bogeyman, and go to the cinema, he was always on the newsreels, and, of course, all the things of these thousands of people marching and well-drilled. Was a bit, considering the way we did our lot, to us, everything we did seemed rather sketchy.
Now, about 1936, when you were 18, did you have any thoughts of joining the Territorials then, you know, when you were just...
No.
Why not, or what, I mean, did you not think of it, or...?
I didn't think of it like that. It was a thing that... It could happen to somebody else. It was in the background.
Did you have an interest in the army at all? Or was it just the RAF you were?
Not even, it was just the aeroplanes themselves.
So, what about 1938 and the Munich crisis? How did
Then we began to get at work. All the fellows then began to get... they began to talk about it and what they ought to do. And about the time of the Munich crisis, this school friend, John Peake and myself, we did actually go and put our names down for the RAF Volunteer Reserve. And they put it on a waiting list. To show how naive I was, I didn't realise that you could have gone and joined, walked into the city of Nottingham Squadron and been flying about the next week, which showed just how naive I was.
So, but did you ever hear anything of the Volunteer Reserve?
Of course, they began to appeal for people to join. I just don't know how, but I know there were appeals to people to join. Probably it must have been in the cinemas and in the papers. And people from work began to join various organisations. And now one of our men joined, who was a bit older than most of us. And my immediate friends, he joined one of the ACAC. There were several local ACAC batteries formed. And he joined one of those. I remember drawing a cartoon of them with the thing with a big cork in the end, you know, a giant popcorn. And that was about...
So you were doing your cartoons?
I did the work. Oh, yes, I did the work. But then, as I say, it was about that time that it began to look, you know, people were beginning to talk in the office about what they wanted to do and what we ought to do.
Now, you and John Peake had joined this put your names down for the RAF Volunteer Reserve, but you never heard from them again.
Never heard of it, no.
So when, now, I believe you joined the South Notts Hussars in April 1939.
Right? Yes.
How did that come about then, and what made you decide to join that unit rather than any of the others?
Well, this is one of my favourite stories. I didn't decide anything. I worked with these chaps, Fred Langford, Spud Baker, Dave Tickle, Fred Langford, Les Marchant. They were all a bit older than me. Les Marchant was quite a few years older. Spud Baker and Dave Tickle came from Birmingham. We used to play tennis together at night. And as in the spring, when things began to get a bit desperate, they told me that I should be called up. At that time, there were the militia, you know, they were talking about this. And they said, if you don't join, you'll be fired, you know, they were all going down and being an infantryman.
Was that something you saw as something to avoid?
I didn't think about it particularly, but these chaps, they used to drag me along. They told me I was too young to take care of myself. I was 20. And one night, one of them had a car. And they turned up one night after tea at our house and said to my father, we're taking him to join something. My father was most amused. And he said, he's not safe to be out, he'd be better with us. So he sort of said, oh, what are you going to do? I said, oh, well, I'm off with them. We went to several places in Nottingham who didn't want us. The Akai batteries were full up. We didn't really, we hadn't a clue really, but we went round these various places. The one which this other chap in the office was in, that was full. Eventually, we finished up at the drill hall.
The Derby Road drill.
The Derby Road drill hall. And we saw a chap in the office, and he said, we said we've come to join something. He said, what? And eventually, we were confronted with this splendid figure riding breeches, putting spurs, what they call the cheese cutter, you know, cap. Bright leather belt, and he introduced himself as Sergeant Bennett. He was permanent sergeant. And Spud Baker, who was a bit of a lad, he was instantly taken with this uniform, and he said to us, how about this thing, you know? Because he said to Ben, as he knew him later, do we wear uniform like that? And of course, lying in his teeth, he said, of course. Took us up to the office, and we hadn't even asked him what he... And then we said, well, what do you do? And he said, artillery. So looking blank at him, we said, artillery. And he said, guns. And someone said, cannon, which he looked aghast. The other, the 426 drill sergeant came in, but Sergeant Bennett said, can I have this lot? Ridley. And he said, he looked at us, and I don't think he said, yes, of course you can. And took us through and saw these green and brass field pieces, and that night we signed up.
And Fred Langford was with you that day.
Fred was there, yes. They were all there.
You'd known Fred from work, had you?
I know Fred at work. I still know him, really. He called over to see me the other, not many weeks ago. Yes, he was. I know, you know, we, as I say, they used to treat me as the very junior in the office.
Did you have any kind of a medical that night?
Not that I can remember.
Did you have to pass any sort of a test at all?
I can't remember any sort of tests.
Did they ask you about your education, you know, things like that? Or
just for the record.
And you were joining as a gunner?
We joined as gunners.
All four of you.
And I said they'd keep us together.
So you were with 425 battery. And were you all put into, I believe you went into A troop.
We went into A troop all as a gun team.
The four of you?
All of us.
Right. Now, that was the first night. Did anything else happen that night, or would you just go?
That was all. They just said they'd keep us together, they'd put us in A troop, come again on whatever night it was, a few nights after.
Do you remember what drill night was? Did they just have one drill night a week, or for you?
I think we had two. But that's the thing, I'm not certain whether we did extra at that time.
And what happened when you went back the first time? Because you wouldn't have a uniform or anything.
They gave us a pair of overalls, a pair of boots, and a side hat. You know, the thing they were wearing at the time. But that was that was it for some time.
Now, when you got there that night, were you made welcome by the rest of the... I mean, you were joining a new... It's almost like joining a new school or something, I suppose. How did they treat you that first day, that first drill night? Do you remember much?
The first drill night, we were handed over to a very... I say elderly. He was older than the sergeant called Inca, who... His nickname in the regiment, for obvious reasons, everybody called him Gunka. And he was, he looked a bit wary of these, you know, office wallers, but he was very good with us, and I can remember the first night we were shown over the 18th pounder and spent most of the evening showing what the various numbers on the gun did, their various duties.
So that first night you got stuck straight into gun drill?
Straight, more or less, elementary, you know, where the layer sat and how it loaded.
How many men were there in a gun team for the 18-pounder then at that time?
Six.
And do you remember what each number did still?
Not particularly. I know what number six did because they appointed me without asking. It was number six.
And what was number six?
Number six got the shells out of the limber, and in his most arduous duties, they had a huge brass strip, and that was for setting the fuses on shrapnel, which it had a thing on top with a handle with two pins in. You put it in the fuse and turned it to the numbers. They'd call a range, and you put this thing on there. It was like a big slide rule, and you slid the thing around and shouted whatever it was, which I've quite forgotten, 16 or 20 or something. Then the number 5 altered it. Number 6 didn't do anything technical.
So you worked it out on a sort of slide rule arrangement and told number 5?
Shouted the number. You passed, got the shell out, and if it said shrapnel, you got the bar off, and if you said 10,000, well, I say 10, I'm going on a bit with 18 pounds, it must have been 4, 5, 6, something like that. You moved it along, that gave you a number, which you shouted with a loud voice.
And the next...
Number 1, of course, was the sergeant. I think
So what would the sergeant do in the team? Did he actually have a job, or was he supervising?
Well, of course, during gun drill, he was telling us what to do.
That would be
start. Find out for some time that, you know, that he was responsible for seeing the gun was properly laid, and you know, at most times he was telling us what to do.
So that was in your team. That was Sergeant Inga, the instructor.
Sergeant Inga.
And then would 2 be the layer? I'm not. I don't.
I think, as far as I could remember, he was the layer.
And what other jobs would? I know you're not quite sure about three.
Number 3 sat on the seat, and he did the, I think he did the elevating, and did he load and open and close the breech. and the others passed the shells. Number one stood at the back of the gun, raising his arm to acknowledge orders, which of course we didn't find out till later.
Now,
but the others were mostly passing ammunition to numbers two and three, who I think number four would probably load. At that time, of course, it was to load and close the breach.
That gives us a good idea of what the sort of thing you were learning. Now, this was elementary. That would you actually have shells to put in?
Dummy
shell. And would you? Did you only practice as number six? Because later on, I think everybody's supposed to know how to do all the jobs.
They did give you a chance at all the others.
But early on, you'd just be concentrated.
Early on, we just concentrated on that. Then after a few weeks, they began to give you a chance at just at least sitting in the seat. I didn't get much chance. They never let they kept me firmly in my place.
Right. So that's one thing you were doing. How about were you doing it? Was a session long? On
couple of hours, 2.5 hours.
And what else would happen that drill? That drill night.
Well, the sergeant major. Eventually, they'd have one or two guns together. Because they'd all be in this drill hall, and eventually they'd put them together, and the sergeant major would take them. His name was Greensmith, a very famous man in South Notts, 425 annals, known as Drag Ropes.
Why?
Because his favourite drill always seemed to be you're always moving these guns about, and the favourite things were with drag ropes, prepare to advance, which means you unhook the ropes which are fastened on the gun shield, hook them into the eyelets on the wheels, and then some of you pull the gun forward while the others have the trail up. So, but he was, I can't think why, but when he was there, it always seemed to be that you've got the drag ropes out.
What was the point of that? I mean,
I think they were so used to the guns getting stuck in the mud or something.
And what else would you do on a drill night? Would you have any? Did you actually have to learn drill as in foot drill?
Yes, we learned a certain amount of foot drill. Now, rifles were very limited, but they did have some rifles, and we learned a certain amount of rifle drill.
Who took you for that? Which NCO? Do you remember?
Forgotten completely. Probably the same people.
Did you enjoy drill? Foot drill, I mean?
Yes.
You didn't find it boring?
No, it was, we were all the young men together, and it was...
Would you do much on a drill night of drill, a foot drill? I mean, marching drill, or was it mainly?
I couldn't really say, but we must have become fairly proficient because I did. We were able to do rifle drill, and occasionally they'd have things for doing guards. You know what you had to do on guard duty and this sort of thing.